So I'd just like to introduce our speakers. Russell Freeland's in the back. He's a wonderful artist. You can see some of his work online. It's posted on the website, of course. He's been in Austin for a little less than a year, and tonight is the anniversary of when he flew out there. So he's going to talk about his experience out there in just a little bit. But first, I'd love to introduce you to John Horrigan, I've listened to several of his talks on his website now, and after tonight, I would suggest that you all do the same. He's a wonderful speaker with a background in sports broadcasting as well, and when I wrote him asking if he would be willing to present tonight, he said, well, what would you like, historical or paranormal? And it was just perfect. Tonight it will be historical, and I'll let him take it from here. Thank you.
Thank you, Skyler. It's great to be here in our home. How about a hand for everybody? Welcome to the debut of this lecture. It's called The Robinson Crusoes of Wake Island. My name's John Horrigan. I'm going to be reading from 25 pages of a lost diary. I'm going to be projecting it up on the screen, but don't worry, I may change the vernacular to make it flow better according to the diary, so I may not be word for word with the diary, but I'm going to try to take the feeling. What I ask you is imagine if you're one of these two men, Logan Scotty K, age 55, or Fred Stevens, age 49, crouched down in the grass for 4 months, not being spotted by the Japanese on a tiny little coral atoll. Just remember that when we're reading this. It's an incredible story, not known to the public. It fell out of view because the censors knocked it out at the end of World War II when these two guys were released from a prison camp. The censors opted not to print it in the Chicago Tribune, and it was lost to posterity up until last year. Background on me, a historical fire researcher, historical astronomy, historical weather, historical disaster. My wife says I'm a junk historian, and she says I'm a junk scientist because I'm into the paranormal, ufology, ghosts. I do something known as the Mass Monster Mash. It's a paranormal conference coming up next week. It's the fourth year in the Mass UFO show. My mantra is, if you believe, I probably don't. If you don't believe, then I probably do. So, johnhorrigan.com is my website, and you'll see all of my multiple personalities. As I told the folks here at the dinner table, when my wife married me, she didn't know that three of my other personalities were waiting for me out in the car. I've been called a lot of things, some I can't print here, but an old New England folklorist, pocket historian, non-academic storyteller, a rogue nostalgian, I like that one, ad hoc science lector, infotainer born from Google Books and PowerPoint. So, I like to bring what's known as the new popular public history, which is a contemporary and invigorating view to American history. We're losing our grasp on our American history as people turn towards the internet. History is being left behind. I've been published in several magazines. I'm a reenactor with the Lincoln Minutemen, and I also am a professional sports announcer. I've been 17 years with the Boston Bruins alumni. I do all of their charity games throughout New England, and I'm also the New England Patriots basketball announcer. I do their charity basketball games, and as I was telling them, I got Randy Moss to shut up. Cell phone's off usually when I say that, mine rings. We know where fire exits are outside. Restrooms, upstairs. Again, johnhorrigan.com or ushistory.me. Those are my websites. And in addition to my Mass Mystery Weekend, which is coming up next weekend, and you can get all the info off johnhorrigan.com, I do something known as Historapalooza, New England History Festival. That comes up in November. We've got John F. Kennedy reenactor doing the Missiles of October, woman doing Harriet Tubman. My brother is doing the Ghost of the Lady in Black. I've got the Naked Quaker. That's not going to be a Quaker Oats guy without pants on. It's about some trials in Boston in the 1600s. And also Abigail Adams. So, Battle of Wake Island. Well, the commanders there were Winfield Cunningham and James Devereaux below. And he looks like David Niven without a few meals. But it was Devereaux who, after learning of the Pearl Harbor attack, warned Wake that we are next. Wake Island is basically one day ahead of the United States, according to the international dateline. So when they found out about Pearl Harbor, it was there December 8th. And he said, hey, we're next. And he was right. Wake Island was annexed by the United States after the Spanish-American War in 1899. Pan American Airlines built a luxury hotel there for a stopover on the trans-Pacific flights to China. The island is 2,000 miles west of Hawaii. And it was under construction as a base, a fortress in the Pacific, they called it the Pacific Alamo, for the Americans, and there are 1,221 civilians on the island at the time of the attack in 1941. about 450 Marines, 68 Navy, 5 Army personnel, and they had 12 little Wildcat fighters. They only had 6 5-inch guns, 12 3-inch guns, 18 M2 heavy machine guns, and 30 caliber machine guns. That's about the extent you're going to hear as far as World War II tech talk tonight, but they were very lightly armed. If you look at it, it's a coral atoll with 12 miles of coastline right over here. And as the Japanese marched across the Pacific in World War II, it was only a matter of time before they jumped from Wake. And what they did is the bombers originate from here, from the Marshall Islands that bomb Wake. So if you look at Wake Island itself, it's basically comprised of 3 islands. You have Wilkes Island here. This is Wake Island proper. And up here is Peel Island. And you can just see where the 5-inch guns are the larger icons there. The smaller ones are the 3-inch guns. They had an airstrip here. That's where the command post was. Camp 1, Camp 2, and a hospital. There's the Pan Am Hotel. And in this area, I'm going to show you, that's where these guys hid out for over 4 months. So the contractors, the 1,221 of them, lived in these sheds. And of course, these would all be taken out by the Japanese when they bombed them. This is what a 3-inch gun looks like. We're going to be talking tonight about Wake Island Scotty. And the man who's over here, Logan Scotty K., age 55, from Clear Lake Park, California. He hit out with Fred Stevens, 49, of Iowa City, Iowa. Both were civilian contractors that were helped out the Marines. I'm not going to get into it, but there were acts of cowardice where when the Marines needed help, the civilians hid out in the brush. Only a third of them, about 400, lent a hand to the Marines. The other 800 cowered in the brush. So this is where these guys hide out for virtually the entire account tonight. Amazing. Well, they knew something was wrong when the Clipper plane, the Pan Am Clipper, all the important dignitaries and all the officers jumped on that plane and left. Somebody knew, hey, there's something up. And this is what happened. It's the day after Pearl Harbor. I often call Wake Island the bastard son to Pearl Harbor in World War II. Never got any of the glory. But it was a heroic struggle where they repelled 2 attacks and the third one was successful by the Japanese. So here we go. I'm going to drive through the diary. You're going to see excerpts and you're going to see icons, GIFs, and JPEGs, which my wife has described as goofy, and that's not offensive, underneath to keep it going. But here we go. We were bombed at 11:55 a.m. by 18 planes, which we heard came from Marshall Islands, 600 miles south of Wake. 27 people killed, 130 injured. The Pan Air buildings on Peel entirely demolished in 7 Marine planes. The Clipper left 1 hour after the bombing for Honolulu with white personnel. So that's chief personnel command. So this was an unprovoked attack, a sneak attack, and there were over 150 casualties. December 9th, 11 planes bombed Company Hospital and new warehouse on Wake. They also set afire 6 of our barracks. Now these buildings on Peel, and you'll see the map throughout the night, are on the northern or upper jaw. As you notice, it would look like a horseshoe. It's on the upper jaw. The ground batteries got 1 plane. The scouts got 1 plane. And the reader's note here in brackets. That day, Scotty found Stevens sick with stomach poisoning and hid him in a dredge pipe against the bombings. So that's how these guys come to meet each other. Wake Island Scotty finds his friend Fred Stevens sick. He decides to stow him away in a drain pipe as the Japanese planes are raging overhead and dropping bombs on the island. And that's how they came to stick to one another and became the Robinson Crusoes of Wake Island. He had stomach poisoning, and Scotty made his way to the demolished Pan Air Hospital, found an untouched bottle of physic in the ruins, and returned to the dredge pipe and treated Stevens. December 10th, 10:40 a.m., 1 hour earlier than yesterday, the planes came in high and got our powder storage on Wilkes Island. So the Japanese, the second attack, and this powder was being used to blast a new mouth through the eastern end of Wilkes, 500 feet long and 30 feet deep. It's ironic because they hit their powder keg, the Japanese did, and then the Americans are going to go right back the next day and hit them in the magazine. You'll see that in a moment. But the eastern end of Wilkes is 500 feet long and 30 feet deep, and this is permitting submarines, after entering the fringing coral reef, to pass through Wilkes Island to the deeper northwestern end of Wake Central Lagoon. So it's a shallow lagoon in that horseshoe type setting of the island, and they dredged it so submarines could make their way in, American submarines. And it was two-thirds done when it was taken by Japan. And when you see the italics, this is Fred, Wake Island Scotty talking, and he says, planes and land batteries claimed 2 bombers down. So the battle's begun. This is the second attack on December 10th. And then comes the invasion. And imagine standing in the water tower as one of the lookouts, knowing at first light that the invasion would come. And the lookout guy in the lookout tower at about 4 in the morning sees the silhouette of Japanese destroyers, Japanese landing craft. He sounds the siren, and basically they say, oh, shit. And Devereaux, the big-eared guy that I showed you up in the beginning, was so wise. He knew that they were outgunned. They could not repel this Japanese invasion. They just didn't have the armaments. They had three five-inch guns. So what they did is they drew in the Japanese force. They made pretend that they were destroyed, and the Japanese kept moving closer and closer and closer, thinking that their bombing runs of the two previous days had knocked out all of their defenses. And then Devereaux said, let them have it, boys, and they did. And here goes. This is the account from Scotty. We were shelled from the ocean at 5:45 a.m. by destroyers. American subs and land planes got 4 or 5 boats and transports. The estimate was later raised to 11 enemy ships, boats, and transports were sunk. One was sunk by a direct hit from our 5-inch guns in the powder magazine. They basically, the first two shots that were fired from one 5-inch gun on Peel sank one ship. The second shot hit the magazine where they were storing all of their shells. The boat just blew up. Planes got one sub, and we got all the rest, all sunk. That day, civilian workmen abandoned all their smashed new buildings on the northern jaw, carrying their wounded around a bend in Wake's Horseshoe to the eastern end of the Marine airfield. There, they improvised a hospital in the abandoned concrete ammunition magazines. The planes came at 9:50, again the second wave, but did no damage as the batteries kept them away. And I'm going to show you this here. So basically, Battery L fired two shots and sank the Hayate. Planes bombed the Kisaragi. Two Wildcats dropped bombs. One bomb went right down the smokestack and blew it up. And then the Yubari over here, the flagship, Battery A, hit it so bad that it went out to sea. It successfully fled, and then it had to be scuttled and sank. So for such a weak regiment on Wake Island, they did severe damage to the Japanese invasion fleet and repelled it successfully. There's a myth that goes on with this. After the garrison repelled this Japanese landing attempt, an American journalist reported that after the initial Japanese amphibious assault was beaten back with heavy losses, and the American commander was asked by his superiors if he needed anything, to which the commander sent back the message, "Send us more Japs." A reply which became a popular legend. However, when Lieutenant Colonel James Devereaux learned after the war that he was credited with that message, he pointed out that he was not the commander, contrary to the reports, and denied sending that message. "As far as I know," he said, "it wasn't sent at all. None of us was much that of a damn fool. We already had more Japs than we could handle." December 12th. "I helped move the guns last night as the bombers had our old position spotted. So Scotty and other workmen," and again, their barracks are bombed out, the hospital's bombed out, "and they took the anti-aircraft battery, which had been in the middle of Peel, and moved it to the northeastern end, and then camouflaged the old position to resemble the guns to try to draw Japanese bombs." So at night, they would move these huge guns. Dozens of men would drag them to different areas, and they'd camouflage it to make it look like the gun was still sitting there. That way, when the Japanese planes came in on their next sortie, they would hit the dummy positions. So this is something that they did over the course of a couple of weeks. They continually moved these batteries all around. And again, when we were talking about the hotel there, the hospital, the command point post is here, and here's the hospital. The dredge pipe where Scotty lived with the invalid Stevens was located on Peel, about a quarter mile from the inlet separating Peak and Wilkes. Okay? So we're talking right about in here. December 13th, quiet all day, no bombers. One observation plane shot down by our scouts at 5:30 a.m. We buried 42 of our boys today. About 35 were civilian workmen, the remainder Marines and Navy sailors. December 14th, bombed at 10:45 by 27 German Heinkels as they appeared to Marine fighters. Now, everybody knows that the Germans did not have aircraft in the Pacific combat theater. They were working in the Atlantic and the European wars. So they misidentified Heinkels, and I'll show you a slide in a moment, as to what they actually were. They were Japanese planes. But he says, "Lots of damage and some dead. Built bomb shelters for air crews. One of our last three planes cracked up taking off. Now we only have two left, which will fly." So they had 12 of these Wildcats, and these were sturdy little barrel-shaped fighters, but very primitive. And now, here on December 14th, literally 6 days after the first attack, they only have two that will fly. And remember when I talked about a Heinkel? That's what a Heinkel is, a German Heinkel, an HE-111. I thought that he was talking about what's known as the Ginja, the P1Y, but he was actually talking about the Nell, the Mitsubishi G3M. So I don't know why he would say German when the red dot indicates Japanese aircraft. December 15th, had breakfast and moved back to the barracks. This is from the dredge pipe where they've been living. The Japs came at 6 p.m., no great damage and no casualties. So the Japs are attacking every single night. There are sorties that are coming in, and they're missing and no casualties because they're playing that game of hide-and-seek with their gun batteries. December 16th, 18 bombers came at 1 p.m. and got our old Camp 1. That's at the western end of the airfield on Wake's southern jaw and the oil storage. That's an actual footage of Japanese, that attack. December 17th, planes came at 5:50 p.m., dropped a few bombs and machine gunned the camp. We went inside the concrete pipe. Pan Air was given another dose of bombs. Pan Air is that hotel that I punched out.
Right here.
December 18th, went over to Pan Air and got medical supplies from the ruins for our doctor. Doctor from San Diego. December 19th, bombers came at 10:30 a.m., not much damage, burned a small amount of fuel, so they had a fuel depot. December 20th, rain all day, no bombers today, PBY, a PBY Catalina, i.e. a flying boat, as pictured, my grandfather flew one of those, came in with brass hat aboard, looks like we might get some help. So they think now that they've been promised by Admiral Kimmel that there will be a relief fleet that will arrive at Wake and help send more Marines, send more Navy men, send more ships, bolster their defenses, and as you'll see, they're waiting for months and months and months, and it never comes. December 21st, dive bombers came in flocks at 9 a.m. and gave us hell, just about ruined us. The PBY left just before the raid and took our commanding officer with him to Honolulu. This isn't Devereaux. Devereaux stays. This is Winnefield Cunningham that takes off. 12 o'clock high bombers came and bombed our barracks, so we moved back to Pan Air. Dive bombers got one of our rangefinders and crippled the gun where Scotty was serving as an ammunition loader. Again, Scotty's a civilian. Our first sergeant was killed on the range fire. Scotty never knew his name, but says he was a very brave boy. December 21st, they came in today and stayed a half hour. I'm talking about the planes. Leisurely bombed and gunned our camp. Got our last little plane. They're out of Wildcats. We have no rangefinder. That means they have no rangefinder on their guns and can't tell how far out to see the ships are or how high the aircraft are. Primitive radar it was. We're practically now down to rifles, one for each two men on the island. Again, we're talking about roughly, 1,700 men? So they've got half that, which is about 850 guns. All they have to do now is land and take over whenever they want. Got a small piece of shrapnel in the back of my right shoulder. The doctor says they'll get it out in a day or two, but it doesn't hurt more than a sliver, so we're not going to worry about it. They bombed for an hour and getting our rangefinder and also both of our last planes. We are sure now out of luck. And again, the PBY brought news that there was a relief force en route and it would arrive on the 24th of December, Christmas Eve. So here's the invasion, and this is really the only known, this is that was shown in newspapers back in the United States, of what the invasion looked like, this caricature of the brave men trying to hold off and repulse the Japanese invasion of December 23rd, 1941. And just for history's sake, the Japanese held it for 4 years, up until September of 1945. And you're going to say, well, the atom bomb was dropped in early August of 45. They held out for a full month afterwards. And for what it's worth, Japanese holdouts were coming out of the jungles in Guam, Marshall Islands, and Wake Islands up through the 1980s, thinking the war was still on. December 23rd, and this is the day of the invasion, and this is through Fred and Wake Island Scotty's eyes. The Jap fleet moved in and after many signals opened up on our batteries. Only three of them remained on Peel, making a direct hit on the first emplacement, blasting it out, then ceased firing. At dawn, dozens of planes started bombing, and things were in a panic in camp, and Patrick Herndon of Wyoming, deserted our dredge pipe. Fred and I found a hole right in the middle of camp and crawled in. Marine officers who that day came to the construction camp notified the homeless among the ruins that the Japanese were about to land and warned them to avoid being caught with rifles because the Japanese would shoot any thus captured. Fear grew in the trapped men who saw themselves unable to fight any longer to hold Wake. Later, the bombing stopped, and everything got quiet except enemy planes flying low all over the island. At 11:30, I looked out carefully, and I'll never forget the sight. About 500 of our company men were being herded past us, stripped down to nothing but shorts and being headed towards Peel. It looked like a brick wall for them, which is a firing squall. Fred and I sat tight. So here they are. They're now segregated from the rest of the group. It's Fred and Wake Island Scotty together for the rest of this. And I will say this about Japanese and the way they treated prisoners of war. Horrific, horrific crimes of humanity. One of their tricks is they'd make the prisoners of war drink water, and then they'd jump up and down their stomach and break their ribs. So compared to the way they treat other prisoners of war throughout the war, the way they treated the men on Wake Island was humane. And here's the raising the flag on this. Christmas Eve. Jap sentry almost found us last night. Was within 5 feet but missed us. We hope to escape tonight if there is a chance. We had a close call, but something attracted the sentry's attention. If we can hold out for 2 hours more until darkness, we'll move out of here and hide in the brush. We will not give up without a fight, as we think the other boys were stripped for the firing squad. Japs are working frantically everywhere to set up guns. If we can make the brush from their dugout in the center of the camp's ruins, we can live until we're found. As food is scattered all over the island, water is now our problem once we're out of the woods. It's getting dark now, and we're waiting for the cloud to cover the moon. So what he's talking about is there's thousands of food caches. Do you remember how I told you about the civilians that wouldn't help the Marines? They hid out in the brush. They'd also take food caches, and they ate very well. So conceivably, there's almost 900 holes of individual food caches all around the island for these guys to survive off of, and they knew about that, and the Japs did too. Christmas. We made it on our hands and knees, lying in depressions when clouds went off the moon. We went to the beach and southeast along the beach in the edge of the breakers. We got wet, but got around sentries and made the brush. So they were trying to travel while the moon was covered so they could get minimum light. Ran into one big gun where 20 Japs are sleeping, but we didn't wake up. They didn't wake up, and we went another way, lying by the road and brush till the moon got out and clouds came, and then crossed over to a larger brush patch. If I were not so ill, and Scotty's suffering from diarrhea at this point, I would enjoy the trip as I got a kick out of every close call, and this trip was full of them. I'm getting better today. We found a dugout at 11 o'clock and got a bed for the night. I'm all in. Woke at daybreak and wished Fred Merry Christmas. We believe there is a Santa Claus, and we spent the day in brush lying low and how low, but we feel better tonight. December 26th. How are you?
Hi, good. Sorry.
We're still early. We just passed Christmas here. December 26th. Found another bed last night and crawled back into the brush this morning. The foliage is thick and the ground is wet, and flies are about as bad as the Japs. We're getting set for months here. We found water enough last night to last us a month. The U.S. should have this place back by then. We'll try to be here when they do. Jap sentries patrol constantly on lookout. Trucks are working fast all day and night and getting much better. Made the lagoon last night and found some clean clothes. Japs will soon have all camps looted, and then that'll be easier for us. They loot through everything and throw it on the ground just like monkeys. Found a dollar bill and some silver they threw away. They tore the bill into bits first. These camps were in patches of brush where the company men had hidden during the day in order to avoid being strafed by Japanese planes. There are only about 100 acres of such brush in Wake's entire area of 2,400 square acres. So Scotty and Fred are going to hide in about 100 acres. These 100 acres were Scotty's and Steven's hideout for the coming weeks, during which the Japanese continually looted and relooted. Then we go back to the diary. Lots of food everywhere, and we're burying some each night, but not too much so it won't show or be missed. December 27th. Slept in deserted camp last night, buried much canned food and 4 gallons water in glass jars, forgot 2 containers, and we'll get them tonight. Did a little looting behind the Japs, and we sat by the lagoon and watched the light signaling at sea. The fugitives used to watch a Japanese submarine surface in what had been planned as an American base and wink signal lights to the warships on the surface and to the base. Rose at 5 a.m. and moved back into the jungle and had apricot juice for breakfast and then a can of boneless chicken each. Camouflaged our hideout, but must move soon as it's getting too wilted. We are about as snug as 2 rabbits with 4,000 hounds after us. We're not afraid, just careful. We have coffee for breakfast, tea for lunch, beer for dinner, all from the same canteen. It's now 3 p.m. We'll set out again in about 2.5 hours. December 28th. Heard Japs looting all around last evening between 4 and 5 o'clock, talking and breaking open trunks, the brush being full of loot.
Over 500 men carried their stuff out here, and there are probably one half that many foxholes to be looked into and torn apart. We found one $2.50 gold piece they overlooked and 81 cents in silver. I carry a hatchet and knife, Fred a hammer and knife. Wish we had revolvers. At 2:15 today, Sunday, three Japs walked right over the edge of our nest, one carrying a suitcase over his shoulder on a stick, two following behind him. They were off the trail looking for more camps to loot and walked right onto our doorstep. Fred and I sat tight and they didn't see us, though we were less than 10 feet away. They were close, too close, and I just sat still and crossed my fingers. Fred did the same. December 29th. I found a fountain pen and here we go from pencil to ink. Now 2:15 p.m. and we're hugging turf. Have heard Japs twice today within 100 feet of our apartment. Thought we heard a siren short while ago, but birds do so much screaming one's not certain. Seaplane just took off and passed over at low altitude going very fast. We were looking for Japs starting to pick up all food around camps soon, so we hide some each night. Did not venture out until 11:30 last night and came in at 5 this morning, but crawled under a bush and slept 3 hours. What a life. We stayed in bed for breakfast this morning, had the morning paper first. He's joking. Then coffee and ham and eggs. Coffee was weak. It will be tea for supper, all out of the same water canister. Laundryman is not called today. Must change laundry. December 30th. Well, here we are at 2:15 again and going strong. Scotty often wrote at this hour at 2:15 because the Japanese were resting in the heat after their luncheon instead of scouring the brush. Found more water last night and brought in one big can chili beans, sardines, and cheese crackers. Also found drafts and cashier's checks for $400, $200, $100, and $18 cash. Total for night, $718.11. Put it in the kitty. Getting so the can can smell money in the dark. So I can he can smell money in the dark. Brought in a can of powdered milk and milk our own cow now. Huh. One more day of this year left, and soon Congress will come back from their vacation and do some more talking about fighting. What a bunch of boys we have been paying all these years. We two don't know what's going on in the world, but we can bet that in Washington it's mostly talk. Last day of 1941, December 31st. What a year. Enough happenings to make some people a lifetime. No Japs within alarming limits today. Rained and we had to take cover in an adjacent dugout. Maybe safe while raining, but in sunshine looters are often out snooping. January 1st, 1942. Happy New Year, everybody. Started out lucky for me, for I found a check for $150 and 20 cents cash. Wake on Scotty, he's raking it in. That's close to $1,000. The check was wet, but we'll put it by to dry. And Scotty's very Scottish, of course. So he's born in Bridgeville, California. This swells our potential pot to more than $800. Went to dugout to escape the rain, and Fred heard Japs coming. They missed us by inches. Our closest call to date, moving today to a drier hideout. Every day's a panic to them. January 2nd, fixed up dry shelter further away from camp. Spent day undisturbed there, but once heard Japs looting the camp. We will only be found by accident here if they search for us, but we can now tell there are probably 3,000 on this little island and only about 100 acres of brush for hiding. When not busy, the Japs often prowl through it to kill birds and look for new camps to loot. Well, here's hoping. January 3rd. Day passed quickly. We fixed one brush fence to keep Japs out of trails near camp. You're going to hear them. They're going to make decoy trails to make the Japs go away from where they are. And again, when I'm saying Japs, I'm not using that in a derogatory. I'm trying to be PC. That's the talk of the World War II lexicon. Ate salad and shrimp with mayonnaise. We have a half gallon of this stuff left. Now getting sundown and moon will be right up. Going out at dusk to get some exercise. January 4th. Found a real food cache last night. Got 10 canned sausage, 6 chipped beef, also 12 tuna, and a gallon of cranberries and 1 gallon of Bartlett pears. Good food ahead except crackers or bread. But we will make cereals do. We do not dare light a fire, maybe later when it gets stormy. Cloudy tonight, we'll set paper, that's tarp paper roofing, to catch rainwater. They're making their own cistern. Stayed quiet, but heard looters frequently. January 5th, found 6 gallons of water, 14th day, so 2 weeks now, since we became fugitives from the monkey gang. We slept at the Palace Hotel last night, and again, they're taking famous hotels in San Francisco, and that's saying that's where they stay, and that is a depiction of the Palace Hotel over there in San Francisco. We slept at Palace Hotel last night because of rain. Two Japs went by very near, but not so close as before. Have blocked most of the trails with dead trees, but they must have climbed over. I think they were lost. Would like to know what the U.S. is doing about getting back this place. Guess they know by now that we are at war. Christmas holidays are over and Congress must have about finished its bicarbonate of soda. The Japs here are working every minute to make it harder and cost more lives to take back Wake, but our Navy don't seem to be showing up yet. We know that they can't let the Japs keep this place, as it would be a base to bomb shipping, and the Pacific must be kept open for supplies if we're going to win this war. Seems that we are not ready, as Knox says we are. Knox is the Secretary of Defense. We need a revision of our whole defense setup with some young brains. The weather's broken today into some sunshine and a little rain. Spring looking in on us. Remember, this is a tropical island just north of the equator. Quails are mating around us and little lizards hatching out. Birds are nesting and days getting noticeably longer. Jap trucks are very busy strengthening positions. All buildings are being mined, no doubt will be destroyed as soon as it looks like the island will be retaken. So they're stringing up mines as booby traps. Fred and I are sitting tight, but the days are getting awful long and the flies are very bad. And better, but not well yet. Still suffering from the diarrhea. Very weak and dizzy and don't have the right food. Also very thin. Some days the stomach is fairly normal, but the next day not so good. I cannot get over seeing the other boys stripped to their shorts by the Japs and wonder if they were put on the boat or if it was the brick wall for them, firing squad. We'll probably find out someday if we're not caught. If caught, we'll surely find out. Got up early and camouflaged the camp. This is our first work at daybreak each morning. One scout and three bombers went out northeast at 6 o'clock. The scout returned twice and bombers returned about 3 to 4 in the afternoon. Four alarms from sirens seem to have the Jap boys on their toes. We hope Uncle Sam starts knocking at the door soon. 11-inch guns will be music to us. January 7th. Up at 5:30 a.m. in more camo. Read a story in Reader's Digest and started a novel. Went back to the old camp and found that it had been looted yesterday. Another close call. We are still one move ahead of the Japs. Sat for a long time on our front porch and finally to bed with lima beans for lunch and plums for dessert. January 8th. Went to Chinese labor camp and brought in some cornflakes. Bomber number 13 just passed over us on the way out. A large four-motor job. Number 20 followed going south. Little scout plane left at 6:15 a.m. And again, they're in the flight path of the airstrip. Third bomber now going out. Lunch was new potatoes, corn, sardines, seedless grapes. Good. January 9th. Slid out at 4:30 a.m. and lone wolf for sugar and books while Fred camouflaged the camp. Near visit from one Jap who at 11:30 came within 30 feet of our camp. We're going to screen some getaways so that we can crawl off unseen if they climb in on us. All three bombers went out today as usual. So they're making assessments on all the flights of the Japanese. January 10th, Mary's birthday. Happy birthday, sister. It's his sister's birthday. Arose at 3:30 a.m. and went out for food. The moon was light as day. Camouflaged at 5. At 11:30, a Jap knocked on the door. Thought that we were finally caught. He looked right at us, then turned and walked away. He must have had his eyes on something nearer to him. We moved into deeper brush and lay low the rest of the day, thinking perhaps Jap had gone for help. Now, about dark, think we're going to move into camp. January 11th. 35 days since the war started, since December 8th. About 20 since the island was captured, December 23rd. Japs came back, raided us, and we lost what few trinkets we had gathered. But we're still at large, thanks to our lucky star. We've moved about a half mile southeast along the edge of the lagoon, and by 1 o'clock, four Japs have already passed near. There are just too many people on Wake for so small a spot. Probably 3,500 Japs or more. They're very nervous today. I think that they expect the U.S. soon. It's about time, we think. January 12th. And I like this photograph only because imagine lying on your back all day long and that's all you can see, the planes fly over, so you're not spotted. Yesterday was a nightmare from noon on. Japs all afternoon, almost stepping on us. Seems we picked a group of trees that we reached the lagoon's edge, and at high tide the Japs could not get by on the lagoon side, so they either went around us or crawled through. At least three were 20 feet from us in the brush, and five more passed nearby just outside. This is not good for our nerves. We moved back near the old camp. So they've got a couple of camps that they're trying to rotate around. But the looters are out, the Japanese are out looting. Slept at the Waldorf Astoria, and that's the Waldorf Astoria. Had good bed and overslept until it was too late for safe traveling. Am jittery and wish Uncle would start knocking. Talk about Uncle Sam, knocking on the door with some 11-inch guns. That will be sweet music to us, and we'll find a hole while it's going on. January 14th. That's a Google Earth picture taken of Wake Island within the past year. Well, we got by the 13th just by a hair and hope for better as we're getting jittery. We slept on coral. Wish we had some outside news and knew how our folks are and when Uncle is coming to get us. January 15th. It's now approaching mid-afternoon when looting is heaviest. We may get by with little or no alarm as the near camps have been pretty well combed over and hence the Japs work farther away. But by the same token, they creep into all likely trails looking for more loot. We have camouflaged the trails to our camp as much as possible. We expect American help about Sunday, if not before. January 16th. We almost had callers. They missed us by 15 feet. They were probably lost while looting and trying to find a road. They did it, but almost stepped on us doing it. Guess we will have to put up signs. Private property, keep up. Lots of noise today. Trucks and tractors going all day. We were out 2 hours last night and got in a little exercise. We really need it. We've been lying down so long, we get dizzy, and when we stand up, we're very weak. Made another day by the grace of God and 15 feet of brush. Something is sure taking care of us as we couldn't be this lucky. Now, here it is January 16th. The Japanese invaded on December 23rd, and we've counted five close calls where they think that they've almost been stepped at or looked at. And you wonder, and I'm a guy who believes in miracles and fate, and that we have to understand that we may not be able to understand the mundane world. And there's somebody looking out for these guys because they should have been caught and brought in by now. But here it is, January 16th. They're still out on the loose, and nobody's found them yet. And they're not that careful. And you'll see, it's Scotty who's the careful one, but Fred is kind of clumsy. And you could have picked a better partner to hide out in the scrub brush, but he's stuck with Fred, and you'll see that coming up. January 17th, son's birthday. He's 25 years old. Well, it doesn't matter much what happens to me. I have the comfort of knowing that my son will carry on and that our little mother will be provided for, and this makes it easier to face the hazard of each succeeding day. He's facing his own mortality here. We've been with the Valley of the Shadow now for 41 days, so it's been 41 days since December 8th when the shelling first began, and we've had a lot of close calls, but we're being as careful as we know how to be. If I don't get back, I will have had what few folks have had, 25 years with two of the best scouts on Earth. Nips were busy at gun practice all day. That's an anti-aircraft gun, actually, that still sits on Wake Island today. January 18th. Went out early and found a 2x6 tongue and groove to make a body of a crossbow. We'll hunt some nails for ammunition tonight. Scotty made the bent part of the bow from cocoa wood and eventually was able to kill rats at 20 yards. Flies are terrible today. About 20 on my hands as I write. January 19th. Japs are collecting all mattresses in the camps around us. They were here today at 11:30 and got a truckload. Now is zero hour. The Japs are moving all around us. Some talk English to each other. Scotty later learned that the voices talking English belonged to parties of American prisoners whom the Japanese brought back under guard to reveal hidden supplies. At this point, I'll just tell you about those prisoners. A lot of these people were thrown on death ships and taken to war camps in Japan, namely Sasebo. A contingent of a little under 197 men were left on the island throughout the war. In June of 1942, they were all walked down to the surface of the beach and gunned down on their backs. January 20th. One alarm at 10:30 when three Japs walked past back of our camp. We could see them, but they couldn't see us. The tractor working near us makes a lot of noise. I slept out at Mark Hopkins, that's another hotel in San Francisco, last night, and Fred stayed in camp. So the different hiding places they name after great hotels. I had the bridal suite, but no blanket, no rat trap, but I slept better. No snoring by Fred to listen to. Another alarm this afternoon, but the trail drew them away. So their decoy trails are drawing the Japs away. They're covering their footprints. January 21st, up at 5:30 and look for new home. The more we look, the better we like what we have. Morning passed without alarm, except for some rocks thrown at birds by the Japs. Only one plane took off this morning. I guess Japs have given up expecting Uncle Sam to try to take back Wake. January 22nd. We went out last night and looked for our water supply and found 2 gallons missing. We feel that there may be some other Americans still hiding on the island. Although we're not sure, we keep close to our dugouts. We found 4 company contracts, and I'm picking up all that I can. So somebody got their water. January 23rd. Bad news last night. Japs found two-thirds of all of our food supply and took it away. Now we are crowded for 30 days food supply, even if we cut down on the eats. We caught no water last night as we only had one shower and it was too light. We're moving all our food to what we hope are safer places, but these Japs are regular bloodhounds. January 24th. We caught 11 gallons of water last night, enough for 3 weeks. We also buried 20 cans of food that we brought in from another cache where the Japs are combing the brush harder. Today is 48 days since the war started and 32 days since we have been in the brush dodging the Japs. They should get tired soon. January 25th. Two mild alarms this morning, but they went by. Some news of home folks would be welcome, but we don't dwell too much on that because it gets us down. We wonder why Uncle doesn't get going, but guess he just wasn't ready when this thing started, which is true. The United States was not prepared for war. If he had seen as much of the Navy as we have seen here on Wake Island, he would know that he wasn't ready. January 26th. Jap construction dragline moved to our place at 9 this morning, and there's been heavy blasting at times so near that small rocks fell around us. These boys have a lot of efficiency and don't seem to mess around. We would do well to send some more of our boys to their school, especially Knox, who was telling the world that he was ready months ago. Knox was a buffoon, Secretary of Defense for the United States. 50 days since the war started, and we're not ready yet. Japanese, in terms of seizing bases and building them up, phenomenal that they could turn around on a base. January 27th, blasting today. We got rocked at noon, but not hit. We've looked for a new hotel, but can't find one. So well hid, so we'll stay here. Our jitters are better. January 28th. Just at 12, we heard brush crack and looked up to see three Japs going by the trail, just 50 feet from the camp. Suddenly, one turned back and then started in over the brush directly towards us. When he got within 20 feet, we faded out the other way, making as little noise as possible. We crawled on our hands and knees for 700 feet and ran across a road and dived into the brush on the other side. Went into the camp and crawled into a place right under the doormat and stayed all night and day without food and water, then went back to see if we could salvage anything and found our camp intact. God is still looking after us, but why, I don't know. January 29th, spent day in hideout number 4, no light, no food, no flies, no room, no air, but no Japs. Felt lucky we were alive. These Japs have done more actual work on this island in 37 days than the U.S. did in 9 months. Work that we should have been doing, and we would not have lost weight. Of course, there was no war on when we started, but everything for the surface should be built first, not for beauty. Came home at 10 last night and found hideout number 3 okay, our gift from God. Arrived on island 3 months ago. My $30 bonus will start on Sunday. January 30th. Fred discovered this morning that the last Jap who went after us had found his little bag of treasures, and that is evidently why he stopped and did not find the camp, as he was all excited about the bag. Planes patrolling all day and trucks busy. Gosh, we are glad to be in this home again after thinking we had lost it. I have been very weak of late and get so tired, no starch food and not enough exercise. Am losing weight but putting on whiskers. I begin to look like Christ. January 31st. Feel better today but still weak and tired. 3 planes overhead all afternoon. I'm burying this book tonight, and I'll start a new one so as not to lose my record if anything slips. Now, Scotty wrote 3 diaries and buried them in the hollows and trees. February 1st. This is the second to last month they get caught in the book. Our story ends in March. I went for a walk. Oh, thank you very much. I went for a walk and ran into 2 Japs, but they turned away in time. Hard rain came and Fred had uncovered our bed before he left and it got wet through. There's Fred again. We feel the threats that, thank you very much, we feel the Japs may get out of detail to hunt us down soon. We will have to be on the watch for sentries at night on the trails. My $30 monthly bonus from the company begins today, my 4th month on Wake. February 2nd. We are 2 groundhogs and today is Groundhog Day. Plane's up at 6:30 and they seem to be expecting company. I hope it's Uncle. Sun is shining, so I guess we'll stay in our holes for 6 weeks more until the Japs smoke us out. There's a cold northeast wind, and we have nothing to wear except shirt, shorts, and pants. No undershirts, socks, or coats. It's hard to keep warm. Planes have been lazy, not much doing in war business. Good night to your mother and son. February 3rd. Showers and cold, breakers rolling high. We took stock and can go about 3 weeks on food we have, then we must raid the main camp. However, if we get the right kind of windy dark night in the next week or two, we'll go in to ease our worries. It's like pulling the tooth. We'll get it over. February 4th. Fred has a hunch that help is coming soon. First time he's been optimistic about it. With planes up all morning, half the day is licked, which is something to us as we are living from hour to hour now. Little lizards crawl over us catching flies. They are so tame now, we have to brush them off while riding. Their heads and bodies are just 2 inches long and tails about 3 inches, dark brown, with 3 gold stripes from end to end of the body. There are 6 on me as I write, and I love them. One has a purple tail, and one little fellow is speckled and has no stripes. I guess he's just a private. According to my figures, it should take Uncle Sam about 60 days to get organized, equipped, and supplied to start steaming up the Pacific. So he should be on his way here any day now with plenty of planes, boats, and subs to take care of the situation. One Jap plane is still out. We can only speculate as we are in the dark on the underside of the war. We only know that for Uncle to control the Pacific, he has to occupy all the islands that can be used as bombing bases, and that includes Wake. Yesterday, I think, would have been Grandpa Kay's birthday. That's his grandpa. I'm hoping soon to hear some sweet music like 1,000-pound bombs dropping on our roof. February 6th. Put a layer under our bed in the ground, raising it up from the dampness 2 inches, which is too much altitude for safety. I guess we'll get used to it now as the new leaves are coming to help our camouflage. We now lie down all day and are getting really soft. You should see our hair and whiskers. Japs are putting in crops around us as though they intend to stay. Soon they may move out families and maybe even dogs. Then we will have real trouble. February 7th. Time going past today more slowly than ever before. Birds are sitting in trees along our back trail and the sun beating down very hot. We're getting soft. We can hardly get around after lying flat so much. February 8th. Now 2 months since the war in Wake started and we're still okay but with our fingers crossed. Have not tasted bread for 6 weeks and won't, I guess. I read most of the day. My eyes are okay. Lost my glasses with my bag when the Japs landed, but I found a good enough pair. February 9th. Fred and I wish nights were longer. They're so restful. When one has to be alert every minute of the day, it's very fatiguing. Fred and I agree that we are more tired after a day of watching than after a day of hard work. Try lying flat just one day, watching constantly for Japs with guns who are looking for you and will probably shoot you on sight. February 10th. Went to old barracks to see if any food was still there. Found the place boarded up and it looked as though the Japs are using it for a warehouse. Coming back, I ran into a trap in the dark, but luckily, I was going very slowly and found it before making any alarm. So there's a trap, a tripwire of a mine. And he almost tripped over the wire. We detoured and got no food. I'm getting corns on my seat from lying down so much. The Japs have a large garden right near us with a well, but their water is too brackish to drink, so we'll have to continue to catch hours from the rain. We've been going very light on food, about half what we should have, and I feel very weak and tired, but a few good events will cure that. February 11th. Morning moon is just a sickle, and 2 patrol planes were up at 6. We figure we can get by 3 weeks more by being very careful with our food, and if we don't get help by then, it will be tough. We hope it rains bombs soon. How sweet they'll sound on our roof. Each one that lands will be as welcome as money dropping in the cash register. 50 days, Scott is always talking about money, 50 days since occupation and 66 since bombing,